One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow.
You gotta roll with the punches. Hi, everybody, your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. We're coming at you once again from the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue. So glad to be with you all once again. We're brought to you by Flood Brothers, Sheehy Funeral Home, Local 150. I don't have my list in front of me, but all those great sponsors. And we want to thank them all, particularly Flood Brothers, who just re-signed up recently. And it's January, what's today, the 12th, January 12th. We're in the middle of the winter malaise. But the beauty of this show, I have one of my favorite cocktails on the show tonight. And we just met maybe a year and a half ago. And he's with the Chicago Garda Pipes and Drums. We've become good friends. Last night we had a show at Mystic Row, the name escapes me for some reason there. And we were also, when we did our Irish pub here at Cork and Kerry, they performed here. Good friend, Lyons Chief of Police, Tom Harry. And Tommy, welcome back, pal.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're the best. So we had a lot of fun last night. You guys came out to the Mystic Rogue and performed, and we had a great crowd and a lot of fun. And last time you were on, you work with Skinny's brother, Tucker, Tommy.
Yes.
He's what, the village manager?
The village manager. He's a former, he's
copper.
30 years of law enforcement, 35
Terrace
years.
Police. Yeah.
Well, he was Oak Brook chief. He worked in Deerfield. He was also chief in Lyons for several years, doing a dual hat role.
He's a character. There's no question.
Oh, he's amazing. He is one of my favorite guys of all time.
Yeah. Tell him I said hi. Tell him we said hi. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's the last time you were on the show. You're still with the Lyons, but we were going back a little bit. You grew up in St. Juliana's?
Grew up at St. Peter Canisius area. Grew up in the area north in Cicero. And I stayed there till I was about 18 years old.
Yeah.
And then we moved. We had to stay in the city. My dad was on a job.
Was your dad a cop? Yeah.
Dad was a cop in Chicago. Sergeant, worked organized crime forever. He's written books. He's been in movies.
What's his name?
Don Harrion.
Is he still around?
He died about 2 years ago.
Oh, God. Great rest his soul.
He was my best friend.
Yeah.
And he's the reason I became the police.
Yeah.
And,
do you have brothers and sisters?
I got 5 brothers and sisters.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Anybody else in police?
As a matter of fact, no. A couple of them did. One, my older brother, Patrick, he was going to go on, but at that time, they had an eyesight situation, and they wouldn't take him. But he's an attorney, but he's a real estate attorney, and he's doing very, very well, of course. I was the only one that got on, and I'm the only one that stayed in the city. Everybody else moved out to the suburbs.
Yeah. And so now you're the chief, but you were the chief of police in Bensonville, correct?
I was.
That's where you started as a copper?
Yep.
When was that?
Well, you know, I got hired in Bensonville in the late 80s. What ended up happening was I was never going on Bensonville. I was going to go on Chicago.
Yeah.
And Chicago had a hiring freeze.
Oh, did they?
So my dad comes home one day and he says, here, apply for this police department. I go, Bensonville.
What's that? Yeah.
What's a Bensonville?
Yeah.
He goes, by the airport, by O'Hare. I go, I'm not doing that. He goes, you're not sitting here not working.
Yeah.
You're doing it.
Yeah.
So I went out there, and it really screwed me up because the orientation was in Wooddale, so I couldn't even find a place.
Oh, yeah.
And at that time, people...
Where's Wooddale?
I can't find Bensonville. I'm not going to find Wooddale. And I didn't go out of the city ever. And when I went to the orientation, there were 700 people for the orientation. And they had one job available.
Are you kidding?
One job. And I was... going to walk out of there. And I ran into another guy from the neighborhood because Chicago wasn't hiring. He went out there.
Yeah.
And it was in the Tribune when they posted it. So when I went out there, and he says, where are you going? I says, I'm out of here. I says, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
And he says, come on, I'll stay. You'll stay. I says, all right, I'll give it a shot. So I stayed, and luck of the Irish, ended up number one on the list.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Crazy.
I bet your dad was proud. Huh?
Yes, he was very happy that I didn't go out with Chicago. If he knew it today, what Chicago was about, he would slash my tires to make sure I never made it to the test.
So then you put it, and then you've been at Lions for 3 years?
Yeah. I did about, retired from, I had every job in Bensenville. You know, I was lucky enough to, I was in patrol for 3 years. Then I made detective. I was detective for 5 years. And then I was detailed out to the Illinois State Police as an undercover narcotics agent. I did that multiple years.
Yeah.
And then I got promoted to sergeant, commander, deputy chief, and then chief of police. And then it was a good place to be.
How many cops you got in the Lions?
Lions sworn close to 30.
Okay.
And it's a good place to be the police.
I'll bet it is.
It is. You know why? Because our elected officials are absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
Our mayor and village board.
Who's the mayor?
Christopher Getty.
That's the guy.
Outstanding guy. He's about 38 years old. He's been mayor.
Wow, that's all he is?
He's been mayor 12 years.
Wow.
He has got more vision. And you know, I kind of compare him to Mayor Daley because, I mean, I get a phone. He drives around town. He sees garbage cans overfilled. He's calling our version of Streets and Sand, which is our public works department.
Yeah.
He sees cars illegally parked. He's calling me, hey, we got a car illegally parked. This is a guy
who cares about
every resident and how his town looks. Yeah. And he
grow up there?
Yeah. Tireless guy. Just a tireless guy. He's very professional. He went to Illinois State University. Sharp guy, good-looking guy, and he is just such a pro-police guy.
Yeah.
What an honor. And I have a couple other guys who work for me who came from other departments that, you know, retired from Chicago. One's an assistant chief, and he said, it's the first time in my life I've ever had a pro-police mayor.
Yeah.
And that is Christopher Getty.
Well, they don't have one in Chicago, I can tell you.
No, I can tell you right now, my mayor of Chicago, because I live in Chicago, of course, is sad state of affairs.
Oh, that's terrible. Now, you know, you were on the show maybe 18 months ago, so I was looking for other things to link you to on our email blast, and I found your press conference, and it was a hoarder, some guy who was a hoarder, but he had also buried, you guys discovered after you, that he had buried his mother and his sister in his yard.
Yeah.
Tell us that story. That's wild.
He would have been a great landscaper, this guy. Well, I'm sitting in Tucker Sheehan's office, who's the village manager, and I'm sitting there. One of the guys comes by from the works for the water department. He comes in and says, Mr. Sheehan around? I said, well, he's in the other office. He goes, well, I just want to drop this thing off. He says, we have a house in town, 3950 Center. The individuals are not, they haven't had water in a year.
Yeah.
That's not my problem. Call the building department.
Yeah.
I don't care about water.
Yeah.
And, he says, well, no, there's another thing. Some people are saying that they haven't seen the mother and the sister in a couple of years, and that's kind of the rumor that's going around. I go, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he goes, I feel good about it now. I told somebody else. And I went, okay, now I got to do something about it.
Yes.
So Tucker walks in, and he goes, what's going on? I says, tell him the story. So he tells him, and he goes, now it's like a Thursday or Friday. He goes, hey, maybe we're talking. Maybe we'll get a hold of it. Maybe go over there tomorrow, knock at the door. I says, that's it. I want this over with now.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going over there. He goes, you're going to go? I said, yeah, I'm going to go. I want to find out what's happening over there. So I go, I walk to the station. There's a sergeant, Frank Fermato, who's working. I go, Sarge, let's go. Come on with me.
You come with me.
Yeah. You're going. He goes, where are we going? 3950 Center. He goes, oh, that house.
Oh, he knew it.
Yeah, he knew the house. And I go, yeah, what do you mean? What's that mean? And why don't I know about it if you know about it, right?
Yeah.
So he goes, they're not all there. I says, all right. So we take a ride over to that residence, start banging at the door, and there's nobody's answer.
Is it an old house on an empty lot or what?
No, it's basically, it was looked like a normal city lot, except it goes very deep.
Okay.
It might be a 40-foot lot, but it goes probably, I don't know, 180 deep.
Wow.
And you can see all the shrubbery and everything's grown over. So I start banging at the door.
It's in neglect.
And right? And there's nobody answering the door.
Yeah.
So I said, all right. I asked for another policeman, and police officer Grady Connell comes by. He says, Grady, Start knocking on doors. I want to know where these people are.
Open next door and stuff?
Yeah, start knocking on everybody's doors. Yeah. So everybody starts saying, well, we haven't seen them since last Sunday. Oh. And it's Thursday.
Yeah.
And it's about 95 degrees in the shade, right?
Oh, wow. And I said, oh, yeah, this was in August. Yeah.
Yeah. They said he would come out and start walking his dogs and doing this, but we haven't seen anybody coming in and out of the house. I went, all right, this isn't going to work for me. So now I'm thinking maybe they've passed. Maybe they died in the house. And I says, we're going in.
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, here comes some disheveled guy carrying a shopping cart with gallons of water and wearing a pair of jeans and a T-shirt from, I don't know, 1977. And he comes walking up and says, what are you doing? I says, well, who are you? He goes, well, I live here. My name's Michael Elko. I says, oh, hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
How you doing today? He goes, good. I said, what's going on here? I says, you have any water in your house? He goes, no. He goes, we haven't had water in years. Oh, interesting. I said, how do you use the bathroom?
Yeah, how do you flush that toilet?
Right. Yeah. And he says, well, you know, we'll go to the Burger King. I says, so you're using the facilities at the, I'm sorry, the McDonald's. He goes, I'm using the facilities at the McDonald's.
Yeah.
3 a.m, you're walking to McDonald's? I don't think so. Closed. And he goes, yeah. I says, who's in the house? He goes, my brother. I says, you got a brother in the house? Yeah. I says, where's he at? He says, well, he's upstairs, but he's got a heart condition. Is he alive?
Yeah.
He says, yeah. I says, do you have any electricity in the house? He goes, we do have electricity, but we have no water. I says, well, you have no gas meter either.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, we had that taken out. I says, okay.
How old is this guy?
He's in his 40s, late 40s.
Oh, wow. So he's kind of young.
Yeah. Exactly. And look at him. I go, okay, Mike. I said, we're going in. He goes, I don't think you want to do that. I says, well, I says, Michael, this is a safety issue. Your brother's inside the house. We need to get him out of this house.
Yeah.
And I says, let's see if we can get in through the front door. So he goes, well, you can't. He goes, the house is overcome with garbage and debris. And I went, okay.
And he lives there too, Michael?
Michael lives there with his brother. So, I said, who else lives with you besides them? You have a brother, sister, mother? And he goes, well, no, mom and my sister are living with family elsewhere. And mom went to a mental institution. My sister's staying with other family members. I said, okay, on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So okay.
All BS, right?
Yeah. Well, at this point, you know what's funny?
You don't know. Yeah.
The neighbor said the mother was in a mental institution.
Oh, what?
So, she's living in a mental institution now. She's not here anymore.
That's what they've been telling people.
His story, right?
Yeah.
So I said, all right, we're going to try and get in. We try to get in two doors. He goes, well, I got two dogs. Mm. And I says, okay. I said, how do you get the dogs out? He goes, well, we go in and out of the house through the window.
Holy cow.
He goes, we got one dog over here on the north side of the house. The window goes up. He goes, I open up the window, and there's debris piled up. You can see up the stairs. I never saw anything like this. This was unbelievable. It's like take the garbage from a whole neighborhood and put it in this house.
Yeah.
It was unreal. And I'm looking at this, and I says, oh, boy. I says, all right. I said, get the dog out as we're going in. I said, I got to climb in through the window to get in? Yeah. Oh. We tried to get in through the doors, but everything was piled up and barricaded. It was barricaded, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. So we have to go in. I said, I'm not going in. Get that dog out. Chain the dog up.
Yeah.
Now, there's another dog on the other side of the house. They had to go through that window to get on that side of the house because they couldn't walk the dog through the house because there was so much debris.
Yeah.
It was cut off. It was like two separate nations living in one house. So I'm looking at this, I'm going, it's Thursday. Okay, this isn't going to get any better. So I got, believe it or not, I got shit to do, right? So I got bag practice. I got things to do. And I'm like, oh, this is going to really tie me up. I said, all right, Mike, we're going to have to go in. I get on the phone. I said, I call Public Works Department. So I get a little Ryan Grace, who's in charge of Public Works. I said, get me some suits out here.
Hazmat suits.
You got it.
Yeah.
Get the fire department out here. But I can't send the fire department in because what if the subject has a weapon or he's violent?
Oh.
The fire department's not going to go in, right?
No.
America's heroes. So I said, get me some suits. So we pull up and he get me some suits. We all get suited up. Fire department sitting out there drinking cold water. Myself and Frank Fermato and Officer Grady Connell, we have a bulletproof shield. We went in with us because we don't know what the situation is in this house. So, of course, at this point, when I look inside this place, it's like 110.
Yeah.
And I can see the bugs flying around. I smell nothing but urine and feces and everything. And I'm like, at this point, I'm like, I'm sending the sergeant and the patrolman in. Yeah. I'm going to sit out here and make sure nobody gets you from the back. No, I can't do that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm the first one in.
Yeah.
So it's all right, follow me. So we go in. There's like a little pathway to go in and up.
Yeah.
So we go in and we start yelling for his brother.
Anybody here?
I says, because we don't want the guy coming out with a weapon or something.
Yeah.
So we're yelling for his brother. Finally, he responds. And I says, can you get out of there? I said, I want you out of the house. He comes out. We get him out of the house.
Say, we're the police.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, we're yelling police. And,
yeah.
And so we get him. He comes through. The only way to get out of the house is right through the window. Out through the window he goes.
Yeah.
So he's standing out there. Says, all right, now we got to clear the house. Because we got to make sure there's nobody else in here. Because we're going to make this house uninhabitable.
Yeah.
And per, on local ordinances, if you have no water for a certain amount of hours, they will make the residence or the business uninhabitable. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's a necessity. So we go through, clear the house, but when we're going up the stairs, we can barely see anywhere.
Yeah.
And there's hundreds of bottles of urine and feces, and you name it, it's there. So I said, I don't get paid enough. So I said, all right, we got to get out of this place. So we back out. I call two ambulances, one for Michael and then his brother. Wait, his name escapes me.
Yeah.
Get ambulance, get these guys checked out. Let's find out what's going on. I said, we're going to board this house up. Nobody's getting in. He goes, well, there's a couple cats in there. I said, well, we'll leave a window open. If the cats want to get out, they can get out.
Yeah.
So at this point, Michael's in the back of the ambulance. I'm going, you know, there could be anything. There could be two bodies in this house. And we wouldn't even know it.
Yeah.
Let alone getting into the basement.
And just finding them, it would take.
Oh, it would take days.
Yeah.
It was. I never saw anything. And I've been in, you know, 30 years. I've been doing this a long time. Mm-hmm. I've been in a lot of different places. And done search warrants in places. This was pretty bad. So I go in the back of the ambulance. And I tell him, I says, Mike, I said, you'd be taken care of? He goes, oh, yeah. Water, everything? Yeah. Says, all right. So we got a little problem. Where's your mother and your sister?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Mom and my sister, they're out living someplace else. I says, Mike, let me explain something to you. I'm going to rip everything out of that house.
Yeah.
Everything's getting torn up. I said, that house is going to have to be condemned. He goes, yeah. I said, if I find anything in there, in the yard, anything anywhere, or I find a body.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, Mike, there's a good chance that you're going to get charged with murder.
Yeah.
But I would advise you, I think you might want to come clean if there's anything going on. Now, I'm just taking a shot in the dark here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he goes, well, you know, I don't mind talking. I said, well, Mike, hold on 1 second. Out of the blue, I get my phone out, put my phone in the back of the ambulance. There's two paramedics sitting there.
Yeah.
And I says, Michael, you have the right to remain silent.
So
I read him his Miranda rights, because I don't know what's coming out at this point, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to stop him. And so I Mirandize him, and the whole thing's videotaped.
Oh, wow.
And I says, Mike, what's going on? He goes, well, you know, it was a difficult situation. I says, no, Mike, I said, I'm sure it was. I says, talk to me. What about your difficult situation? He goes, well, in 2014, Mom was sick and people were sick or 2016. 2016. He goes, what happened was me and my brother, when our car would run, I would get in the car and we went to the grocery store. When we came back, my mom told me that my sister pushed her down the stairs and she hit her head. I go, okay. And I says, then what? He goes, well, I don't know. Several weeks later, Mom died. I went, oh. I said, really, Mike? I said, I feel bad.
Yeah, I feel bad.
How did your mom die? He goes, well, you know, it was a, we're not sure. Maybe she had a stroke or something, but it was after, you know, my sister. I says, oh. I says, well, where's Mom? I says, well, we buried Mom in the backyard.
Whoa.
I says, oh, you buried Mom in the backyard? I says, wow. I says, I'm really happy that you gave her a good burial, Mike. Good for you taking care of her. I says, this is really good. I'm glad you're giving her the dignity and respect she deserves. And I says, that's outstanding. Good for you, Mike. I said, where's your sister? He goes, well, my sister in 2019 ended up getting COVID. In 2019, she ended up getting COVID. And I went,
COVID?
Unless she was in the Wuhan lab.
Yeah.
She did not have COVID in 2019, but that's okay. Mike wants to talk. Yeah. So, yeah, Mike says, oh, that's a shame. He goes, well, then she got sick, and she was sickly anyway. We were taking care of her. I go, yeah. He goes, and then, you know, my sister died. He says, oh, this is Mike, I'm sorry. So where's your sister? we buried her by Mom. I said, oh, your sister's buried in the backyard, too. At this point, paramedic out the door. He goes, I said, get him back in here.
Oh, he was like, couldn't take
he
it.
He was going to go tell one of the policemen that we got two bodies buried in the backyard. Yeah. I don't want that at this point. So he comes back in, and I go, okay, Mike. I says, can you show us where the bodies are buried?
Yeah.
Oh, I would love to. I says, that's good. I says, you know, he goes, it was a money situation. You know, we couldn't afford to bury them. We couldn't afford this. I said, Mike, I'm not here to judge anybody. I said, but let's see what we can do to give them a proper burial.
Yeah.
So We ended that talk, and then we went to the backyard. He pointed out this one location by a tree and another location in a big bunch of shrubbery. He goes, we put him in a box.
And buried
him in the ground. I says, okay, no problem, Mike. I said, thanks for all the information. Now, at this point in time, I know my weekend is ruined.
Yeah.
So I had all kinds of things I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, I'm having crazy thoughts about, Mike, what are you doing? So anyway, so he tells me what's happened. At this point, I don't know whether he's telling me the truth, whether he's not telling me the truth.
Yeah.
Nobody comes up and says, I just buried your mom and my sister in the backyard. So I call out additional units, call out detectives. I also call out the West Staff, West Suburban Major Crimes Task Force, just to get a crew of individuals to come out.
Yeah.
And now we have to go through this house as best as we can. They pointed out where they were. We also called out cadaver dogs from the county.
Yeah, sure.
Then we contacted the state's attorney immediately, and we worked through the state's attorney's office for search warrants. And because now we want to make sure we get everything done right.
Do it right. Yeah.
Do it the right way. Let's do it the right way, not the wrong way. So we ended up approximately 2 days later. So this was Thursday. So
all
Saturday
this is going on all over the weekend and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we brought out the county unit, the Cook County.
What did they do with Mike and his brother in the meantime? They locked
Mike and his brother were being housed in a.
Hold on a second. Hey, shut up back there. We got Johnny Vegas Sheehan mouthing off back here. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'll tell your brother Tucker.
Yeah.
So we. So we put them up in a hotel.
Oh, good.
Because they couldn't stay in the house.
No, of course not.
And we can't live in an ambulance. So the village put them up in a hotel.
Yeah.
Because right now we don't have a body.
Yeah.
So they're wandering all over the place. So at this point in time, people are calling the media. West Suburban Major Crimes Task Force is coming out. Now they're seeing this.
This is
so
a story now.
So now it's a story, right?
Yeah.
So we did our, I did the first press conference on it.
And, I think that's what we put the link to.
Oh, did you? There you go. Did the first press conference on it. And it.
And it's about a half an hour video. You're sitting there going, crazy. Well, you know.
Yeah. It was continual. It was like almost every 4 hours that it was every day. And, and I just wanted to brief as much as I possibly could
on
this type of situation. So no body, no crime.
Yeah.
Right? So at this point, we can't charge with anything because we don't have a body.
Yeah.
But by the time we could get archaeologists to come in. We needed archaeologists. So we called the medical examiner, archaeologist, Cook County Sheriff's Office, Lieutenant Jason Moran, great guy. He came out. He has done these type of cases. He works for a specialized unit. We planned the dig for Saturday.
A dig.
Yeah. The dig. I felt like Indiana Jones.
Yes.
So this is when I became chief of police, and I refused to dig. So we took over the guy's next door yard and all kinds of things. So what we ended up doing was we started to dig right exactly where he told us where he buried his mother.
Yeah.
We
with just shovels or what? I mean, what,
well,
are you bringing a?
It's you can't. It's got to be. He had said it was buried probably 1 foot deep in the boxes.
Wow.
And they had, he goes, that's where mom is buried or sister's buried.
Yeah.
And I went, okay. So what they have to do is, how it was explained to me by the archaeologists and explained to the county, was that you have to grade the dirt. The dirt's got to come off in layers. And then what they do is,
because I know there might be a body there.
Could be bones, right?
Yeah.
So they need as much evidence as they possibly can find. And then they would take that dirt and they sift it out.
Wow.
And they brought archaeology students out also to help, I believe, from Loyola. And they would sift through this dirt to try to find bones or any type of body fragments or anything that could possibly be there that's of evidentiary value. So it's a very methodical task. So they went through it very slowly, and then we ended up finding a container. Photos on every step of the way.
Photos.
I got some video I'll show you of the bodies.
You can pass on that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, good. I don't know if you want to eat some pizza and then look at a couple photos. Anyway.
Fox's Pizza,
Fox's Pizza, one of the great Mike Houlihan sponsors. Please go to Fox's. So we, the containers were brought out.
So you're documenting the whole thing.
Everything is documented.
Yeah,
meticulously.
Yeah.
Well, we got a lot of attention on this case. Every day was
well,
a
sure.
bigger day. Yeah,
it became
dig.
Bigger and bigger and bigger story.
Well,
yeah.
You know, what's funny is it was being carried in New York. It was carried in Washington.
Yeah.
I just looked at one article. It was from the New York Post.
Yeah.
It was carried in Ireland. I had friends of mine on the guard of police in Ireland get a hold of me and go, hey, you look good on tape, on video. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, your body's out here. I said, oh, shit. Oh, great. I appreciate it. So I said, okay.
Did you actually find the bodies?
Well, of course. So we pulled the container out, and the medical examiner says, well, we're going to open up these cases at the medical examiner's office.
Oh, they're going to take them there.
No, you're not.
Oh.
I said, I'm going to know whether there's a body in this case today, right here, right now.
Good
either
for you.
You open it, or I'm opening it.
Yeah, good for you.
I says, you ain't opening anything. Mm-hmm. I said, if you don't open it, I'm going to open it. And he goes, okay. I said, I cannot walk out of here. I got a neighborhood cordoned off.
Yeah.
I said, I got to know whether this is a German Shepherd or whether this is a body. I says, I'm not going to do this where it turns out you call me 3 days later while I got the neighborhood shut down that it's a St. Bernard. I said, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
I says, open it now or I will. So they opened it. It was a body.
Oh, and, wow. Was it decomposed?
It was decomposed, but you could see the spine. You could see where the pelvis was.
Oh,
And a lot of the things were intact.
Now, was this the mother or the sister?
This was the mother.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of the body that was still intact.
Wow.
Even after, and the mom, you got to remember, she was in there since 2016. So she was in there 5 years.
Holy cow.
So, and you got a lot of water and stuff together. But they put it into it was like figure a Tupperware Christmas ornament box because it was red and green. And then they duct taped the whole thing shut.
Wow.
They did a nice job. These guys could rap at Macy's. And they could rap at Macy's and work for any landscaping company in the state of Illinois. So good for them. They know how to work a shovel. And then we went to the next location. We had dual digs going on. And we went dug
dual
in the next
dig.
Location.
Yeah.
We found that box, took that out. That was the sister.
Was there once again another
Tupperware box?
Yeah,
yep. And found the remains there. They were both brought to the medical examiner's office. And they were determined that they were two females.
Yeah.
So this case is not over. We have not criminally charged them yet.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what charge to charge them with until two things can happen. One, right now it's so backlogged in determining the DNA. So we took DNA swaps from the two brothers.
Yeah.
So we gotta make sure.
Yeah.
That this is the mother and the sister.
Yeah.
Because if it's not the mother and the sister,
who is it?
I'm gonna dig the whole yard up.
Yeah.
So we should have those results hopefully in the next 7 to 10 days. To at least tie them, linking them to the mother and the sister through DNA. Then each bone has got to be examined through by anthropologists, archaeologists, to determine if there's foul play.
Yeah.
But the problem is...
the cause of death,
you got to figure out a cause of death because right now it's undetermined. Yeah. We don't know whether it's if it's death by concealment of a death or concealment of a homicide. Mm. Two different separate charges, let alone if it's a murder.
Yeah.
So, but the problem is that due to the fact it took so long, I mean, those bodies laying there so long, you get to the point where you can't determine whether, if it was a stabbing, they would have had to have stabbed the bone. But if it went right between the ribs and they killed him, you would never know. Why?
Yeah.
Because there's no
body flesh.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you suffocated them, you're never going to know.
Yeah. The lungs are not. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they were, these people were not healthy.
Yeah.
And mom had some mental issues, and the sister had all kinds of medical issues, and these two brothers were going to take care. They couldn't take care of themselves.
No.
I mean, one neighbor said, the brother we brought out of there, one neighbor said, I've been living there for over a year. I've never seen that person in my life.
Wow.
He has never walked out of that house.
Oh, my God.
It crazy. So, but they were very slick and polished what they did and how they did it and very methodical. This is not someone... under any circumstances, do I believe has a mental condition?
Oh, really?
And there's more to it. This is going to turn out to be a financial thing. Trust me.
Oh, sure. And they had to bury them at night, I would assume. Ooh. Otherwise, somebody would have said, hey, what the heck are you guys doing?
Yeah, digging graves, body snatchers. So this will turn out to be a financial situation.
It's still being investigated.
Yeah, we have the federal agencies involved. Because of potential.
Now, where are the brothers now?
Right now, they're being held through social services in a location in Lyons Township.
Oh, wow.
So once over the next 10 days, we will have a determination that, one, it was.
The next 10 days from today?
Yeah. We should know. We'll know that it was the sister and the mother, which I believe. Those are the two missing people that we have, we're aware of. And if what the final coroner's report's going to read, the cause of death.
Oh, yeah.
If it's undetermined, there is no way in this world we're going to get concealment of a homicide.
Yeah.
And, but we'll end up getting this concealment of a death, which is a felony.
Oh, is it?
It is a felony. Yeah. You can't just bury your son in the backyard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, because the reason you can't do that is because what if you killed him and then buried him in your
yard? Yeah, sure.
Right? You got to make, you got to have an autopsy. Yeah, because it's got to cause death and why things happen. So, so they will get charged with felonies. No matter what, they're getting charged with a felony.
Yeah.
They just haven't been charged yet, whether it's going to be a homicide or concealment of a homicide or concealment of a death. And then
now, Tommy, was this their family home?
Yes. Father built a home.
Where was the father? He was
father
dead.
Had been dead for several years.
Yeah.
He was, there was a there was an official record of his death. There was no official death record for the sister and the mother.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, they were, you know, they were fertilizer. So you got to the point where now it's, this is going to turn into a financial case.
And you're of the opinion that these guys are not crazy. They're just...
Based on what I know... And
I
mean,
you would say the, you can't say, but yeah.
Well, yeah, it's very close. The federal government's involved also on this thing about the financial aspects of it.
Were there insurance policies?
There were insurance policies with the father. I'm not aware of the insurance policy. Detectives are looking through all the paperwork on it. But there's also other forms of money's being paid to them because of the mom status.
Oh,
so security.
Sure.
So
they
been,
probably continued to cash the checks and everything. Yeah.
Of course they did.
Oh, wow.
So there is a federal tie to this also. So they'll be charged federally, and they'll also be charged locally. And then we'll do whatever we can to knock that house down.
That is bizarre.
Unreal. And I'm going to tell you, it has really kind of captured... It was a nationwide story, like I said, and it went international. And you don't get these very often, very seldom.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to line up 100 policemen here, I guarantee you, 99.9% of them have never had to deal with people burying family members in a backyard to go what we went through.
Yeah.
So it was a but I was very forthcoming with the media. I felt they needed to know, and so did the neighbors.
Hey,
so
that's all on YouTube, too. Anybody who wants to watch it, you were good.
Yeah, there was
you
about... 10 different things or 8 different press conferences there.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, you know, you don't want the neighbors to be worried.
No.
You know what's going on here, what's happening. The more forthcoming you can possibly be without hurting the case is the way you have to be, as far as I'm concerned. So,
the other thing is, it's so sad, you know.
It is sad.
That happened. Of
and I believe, yeah. And I think I said that in the last press conference.
Can you say their name again? What's their name?
Lelko, L-E-L-K-O, Michael Lelko, and the brother's name's escaping
Andy.
Me.
I'm just making it what up. Kind of name is that? German? Or
I don't know.
Local?
It could be German, Scandinavian.
But
name.
Lyons has a long history. What's the predominant ethnic community in Lyons?
Well, Lyons is pretty...
German or something?
Well, no. It's...
Around.
We have a big Serbian population.
Okay, Serbian. Yeah,
Serbian population in Lyons. Hispanic population in Lyons.
Yeah.
In Lyons. It's a diverse community.
Yeah.
Blue collar.
Yeah.
And industry, but it's a good place to be the police.
There's a great coffee shop over there on, I think it's on Ogden. I had breakfast with Tucker once. Kemp's or something like that.
Oh, P.J. Klemp.
That's
Klemp's.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a bad place.
Yeah, it's a good
spot. They got good food and they got nice people.
It's a
good
great owners. Coffee shop.
Yes, it's exactly what it is. And they're good people, nice people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that had to take up an awful lot of time in your
still
career.
Still is.
Yeah, holy
it's, cow. It still is because you want to make sure you do it right.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be judged
on
this case or any case you take on. You're going to be judged on your actions. So, and especially the way the media was all over it. So,
what's the population of Lyons?
About 12,000.
Okay. You know, it doesn't sound like many, but it's actually a lot. All these,
you know,
everybody's interacting. And
it's a busy place, and here's the reason why. You look at the daytime population with Ogden Avenue that runs from the city out west.
You got LT High School, right?
Well, you have our school, high school district is Morton West.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. And then you have you have situations where we're at Harlem Avenue.
Yeah.
That's right through everything. First Avenue.
Harlem and what, Ogden? Is it?
Harlem and Ogden is two major intersections.
Yeah.
First Avenue is a major thoroughfare.
Sure.
47th Street runs right to I-55.
Yeah.
Because I-55, we border right up to the Chicago border. And so we get a lot of transient crime that comes through our town. I mean, I think last year we took about 35 to 40 guns off the street and received several hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, we just grabbed a guy the other day with 5 kilos of coke and close to $100,000 in cash.
No kidding. Now, how'd you find him?
It was done on a traffic stop.
No
by
kidding.
A very aggressive police officer who does a great job.
Oh, that's great.
Officer Jose Barajas did a great job, stopped the car. The car was purchased that day. It was about a $140,000 car.
Holy cow.
They put $50,000 down on
it. In cash?
Well, they put $40,000 in cash and $10,000 on a credit card.
Wow.
And we stopped the car, and the subject did not have a valid driver's license.
Holy.
And when they went to tow the car.
Where was it, on Ogden or someplace?
It was, as a matter of fact, it was on Harlem Avenue heading towards I-55.
Oh, wow.
And we stopped them, two individuals inside the car. The passenger was also wanted on federal fugitive warrants.
Wow.
Because he had got caught previously with 7 kilos of coke.
Yeah.
And he was going to cooperate, but chose not to. And he was a fugitive.
Yeah.
And, we got close to $96,000 and 5 kilos. So he's tied to a bunch of individuals in the city and gang members. And
But you guys got him in Alliance. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, we've been busy. We had a couple of Chicago police officers shot out there a couple months back.
What were the circumstances of that?
Chicago PD was tracking a vehicle on Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah.
The vehicle license plate was flagged for a shooting, a double murder in South Holland.
Oh, wow.
So as they were following the vehicle, it was on Lakeshore Drive, ended up in Lyons.
They just followed them.
Yeah. All the way to Lyons. Why are you going to Lyons? On all roads lead to Lyons, right? So ends up in Lyons. CPD goes out to make the arrest on the guy. And turns into a fight. They try to flee, try to take off in the car. The police officers are wrestling and fighting with them. Another police officer comes out. Now you got to remember, Chicago PD did an absolutely outstanding job, as they always do. And they went to place the subject under arrest, and he was still fighting with the officers trying to get away.
Yeah.
And one officer had to have a weapon out because these guys were wanted for
murder.
For double murder.
Yeah.
Well, at least whoever's in that car, because the car's wanted, was used in a double murder. So now let's make sure we go home. During a period of time of fighting with the guy in the ground, the one police officer with his weapon out, which was kind of a smart move, but you got to be careful, right?
Yeah.
But as he was jostled and pushed, a round went off, and it went through one police officer's arm. It hit the other police officer's shoulder. They're both fine.
Oh, good.
And but we ended up getting three guns out of that car.
Wow.
Three loaded weapons, extended mags. We got 36 pounds of black market marijuana and about $32,000 in cash.
Holy cow.
A
good pinch.
It was a great pinch. We did the shooting investigation there, and I was out there, of course, because I come out for everything.
Yeah.
And but the guys did a great job. We have a great group of individuals that work for us.
Yeah.
That bring a lot of experience. I brought some Chicago guys over, and we got some people promoted. We did a lot of good things.
Now, we have just a few minutes. Tell me about your career with the Chicago Garter Pipes and Drums. How'd you get involved with them?
So I've been playing with the Emerald Society for 20 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I was playing with Chicago Police Emerald Society for 20 years, and we decided we were going to do a separate band on our own because there's some things that the Emerald Society will not do, like political events.
Yeah.
They will not politically take a stand.
Yeah.
I'm all about taking a political stand. I really don't give a damn what
anybody
thinks.
That's why you were there last night.
Yeah, exactly correct. So our last Pat, who was running for state's attorney, Pat O'Brien.
Oh, Pat O'Brien. You were
was running for state's attorney.
This summer,
We wanted to be able to play for him and do some things.
Good for you.
So,
you're making a statement.
Yeah. And we knew the Emerald Society wasn't going to do it because they, you know, for whatever reason, even though they're all policemen.
Yeah.
So we got to the point where we decided that we wanted to put together a separate group. So we have a lot of guys from the Emerald Society. We have a couple other guys.
Yeah.
Kevin Walsh plays for Stock Air Kilty, and he plays with us. He's not the police. He works for the city.
Yeah.
But Kevin works for plays with us and a couple other guys, former DEA guys. And Chicago detectives, but you don't have to be a policeman to play with us. And, okay. But we wanted to do this, but 99% of them are all cops.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening was we got a call to play for Vietnam vet homeless. His name was Terry O'Brien.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Terry Murphy. Terry Pat Murphy. O'Brien was state attorney.
Yeah.
So Terry Murphy. So I got a, there was a some type of story on the news. They were asking for people. They had the funeral home was asking for people to come out and pay homage to Terry Murphy, who's a homeless vet.
Yes.
And anyway, so I got a call from my daughter Mary Kate, and she called me. She says, "Hey, Dad, did you hear about this homeless veteran Terry Murphy?" I go, "No." She was on the news that he's got nobody and they're going, this funeral home is going to take care of him. And I went, "Oh." I said, "Okay." I said, "Give me the name of the funeral home." So she gave me the name of it. And so I called him on the phone.
Yeah.
And I said, is this Dan? He goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Hey, listen, my name's Tom Herrion." I said, "I play the pipes for the Emerald Society." And I said, "I hear you have a homeless vet that you have that you're going to bury, and
we'd like to honor him."
Yeah, what can we do to? Do you have any bagpipers? And it's Simon's funeral home out in Elgin. There's several Simons, and Simmons is what it is. But he goes, "Well, I was in the military my whole life. I run this funeral home." He says, and he started to break down. He goes, "You guys will come out?" I said, "You'll come out?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'll come out and play for the guy."
Yeah,
and he says, "Well, it's about 2 days away. We're going to have him." I says, don't worry about it. We'll be here.
Yeah.
And I says, "I got guys." He goes, "You got guys?" I said, "I got guys." I said, we'll come out with a couple of guys. So we would immediately went out and had our garter uniforms made.
Oh, good for you.
Because we need permission. And all I'm not doing this.
Yeah, you know,
I'm not playing all these crazy Emerald Society rules.
Yeah.
I'm not a good rule follower. So I said, so we immediately made it. We went out and did it on our own, drove out to Elgin.
Yeah.
Bruce Quintos went. Danny
Bruce
Young went.
Bruce is the best.
Oh, Bruce is the best. Yeah. Bruce, myself, and Danny Young went out there. And we get out there, and there's 1,000 people.
Oh, that's great.
Flags are everywhere. The motorcycle guard are out there, all the coppers.
Yeah.
And I look at Dan Simons. I said, "Danny." I said, he goes, "I don't know." He says, he goes, "I thought there were going to be 3 of us." I said, "I know. You said that on the phone."
Wow.
Channel 2, Channel 5, Channel 7, Channel 9, Fox, everybody. Yeah. Well, guess what? It made it on the 10 o'clock news.
Oh, that's great.
Well, the Emerald Society went crazy. You got 2 separate bands, police bands. And I thought to myself, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I've been with this band 20 years. I played in Ireland. I've played just about everywhere for every fallen policeman.
Yeah.
I said, this poor homeless guy, you're going to give me crap about playing for this Terry Murphy, who's a homeless veteran? I said, why didn't you volunteer to play?
Yeah.
I said, you didn't show up for nothing. I said, so in essence, we gave birth to the Chicago Garden. We got about 18 guys, and we're
terrific.
We've opened up for Gaelic Storm. We've opened up for Derek Warfield. We played last night with you, of course.
Yeah.
We're going to be playing at the House of Blues.
Terrific.
We're pretty advanced, and we're already tied in with Jim Sweeney with the Union. And we're going to be playing
for Local 150, Jim Sweeney, our sponsor.
Jim Sweeney, our guy.
Our sponsor.
I texted Jimmy last night. We lead his parade on the south side on the 12th.
Oh, he's the
best.
So
we've been doing that for several years.
Yeah.
Jimmy's our guy. And, you know, I'm sure you probably figured out I know every bar on the northwest side and south side of Chicago. So not that I have a drinking problem, because I don't.
We got to wrap this up. I don't believe that for a minute. God bless you, Tommy Herrion.
My pleasure.
We salute you, pal.
What a pleasure.
That was so enjoyable. We're going to, you got to come back again, of course.
Hold on, come back anytime you want.
Stories. We're going to take a break here on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste recycling and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey everybody, this is Charlotte Houlihan. Don't touch that dial. My grandpa will be right back. Some more Hibernian radio. He said something about seeing a man about a horse. Sounds like I'm actually going to get that pony after all.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
On the death walk of saloons that decorate Western Avenue, only the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, the soul of Beverly, sits right on a 50-yard line of Chicago's Southside Irish St. Patrick's Day Parade at 106th and Western. Generations of Southside Irish have quenched their thirst in the Cork, snuggling up to memories of family, faith, and fierce loyalty to friends. It's the jewel of this neighborhood where we celebrated weddings, christenings, wakes, and unforgettable victories. Proprietors Bill Guidy and Mike Fitzpatrick, now celebrating 20 years in business, welcome you home for a cold brew, to share a good story, or help you throw one hell of a party. With over 20 beers on tap and a full bar for your pleasure, this is the spot you can sink a root and get your Irish on. Cork has plenty of seating, from our private event rooms to our 300-person beer garden. Our interior space brings you back to the homeland of Ireland with our vintage photos and authentic Irish decor and Chicago memories of the good old days. So say hello to a stranger, make a new friend, fall in love, or just enjoy the company of people you forgot you knew. The Cork and Kerry continues the Southside tradition parents and grandparents brought here from the old country. Come on by the Cork and Kerry and get some. The Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, for private parties, just pals hanging out, or intimate cocktail rendezvous. Come on home to the south side of Chicago at the Cork and Kerry.
And we're back. Hey, thanks to Tom Harrion, Alliance Police Chief, for those great stories. He's the best. He'll be back soon. I want to remind everybody, our old pal, speaking of the Chicago Garda Pipes and Drums Band, Bruce Quintos, our old pal, is performing Sunday at 5:30 at Clancy's on 103rd Street. Rico Quinn is the name of that. He has another band. Very musically talented guy, just a terrific guy. And he's been good to us so many times with the Chicago Garda. Also remind everybody, next weekend, on the 21st of January, Friday, Irish film star John Connors and producer Tiernan Williams are in town for the weekend. To premiere their film, Endless Sunshine on a Cloudy Day, actually to reprise their film. Friday, January 21st at 8 p.m. at the Irish American Heritage Center. Saturday, January 22nd at 5 p.m. at the Siskel Film Center, 164 North State Street. And then on Sunday, out at Gaelic Park at 3 p.m. For the screening. The screening, it's just a terrific film. But then the guys are going to be here to talk about the film. You got to meet these guys. John Connors is an international film star in Ireland, but he's also a Irish traveler and just an amazing story. He's an activist as well as an artist. We're sponsored by the Hilton Chicago, Culture Ireland, and Cluster Fox Films. That's the name of their company. So these guys are fascinating. You will love meeting them. So join us for the crack. Okay. You know, Billy, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue, look in the window, crins, rocks, hearts, any of those great Irish ones. See the ghost of me, old pal, Jimmy Goff. Then Misty says to me, hey, Wooly, who died? Mary Ahern, nee Meehan, beloved wife of John Ahern Jr., and the loving mother of Gail, John Ahern, Mary Lee Ahern, Matt Patrick Ahern, Luke Ahern, and the late Christopher Ahern. God rest her soul, Mary Ahern. And that was sent to me by the Knights of Columbus, Father Perez chapter. Also, Patricia Ann Houlihan, 84, gained her heavenly wings just last week in Barrington, Illinois. She was a beloved wife of Fran Houlihan and the devoted mother to Kathleen, Mary, Maureen, and Eileen. After their daughters graduated from beloved Mother Macaulay Liberal Arts High School, Pat and Fran made their move to Barrington, where they built their dream home. Barrington Hills. Pat devoted her time and talents to Advocate Good Shepherd Hospital, where she volunteered at the surgery desk, served as the auxiliary for many years, even serving as auxiliary president for 2 years. The hospital's current chapel and prayer garden were endowed by the Francis J. and Patricia Houlihan Foundation. God rest her soul, Patricia Ann Houlihan. Pat Whalen, James Patrick Pat Whalen, age 70, in Austin, Texas. He graduated from Elgin High School. He's a third-generation printer and enjoying a lifelong career in commercial printing with Whalen Web Printing. Pat had an insatiable thirst for life. He was always full of joy, whether he was on the golf course, cruising the back roads of his Harley, entertaining his wonderful friends and neighbors, enjoying time with his fun-loving family. You could always count on a good time and a good laugh with hanging with Pat. God rest his soul, Pat Whalen. Terry McSweeney, beloved husband of Christine, and the father of Brendan, Megan, and Stephen. Proud member of the Plumbers Union Local 130, technical engineer with over 20 years of service. He was born in Spittal, County Galway, Ireland. Terry was very proud of his Irish heritage. God rest his soul, Terry McSweeney. John P. Jack Murray, age 92, loving husband of Margaret, devoted father of Kathy, Donna, Joe, Mike, Kelly, the late Peggy, the late Tom, and the late John Murray. God rest his soul, Jack Murray, 92. James Fitzpatrick, Jimmy Fitzpatrick, beloved husband of Inger and the father of Jessica. God rest his soul, Jimmy Fitzpatrick. All right, we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be back with a final joke on Hibernian Radio. So stick around. With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Hey folks, Charlotte Houlihan here. Did you know that Hibernian Radio is now streaming worldwide on Global Irish Radio? Every Saturday night at 7 p.m. or 1 a.m. in Ireland. Yes, the Irish are always way ahead of us. Check it out at globalirishradio.com or capital GIR.ie.
Southsiders have always known where to get the best pizza on earth, Fox's Pizza. For over a half century, the Fox family has been creating that delicious thin crust za that your mouth will tell you, this can only be Fox's. It's a Chicago Beverly institution at 99th and Western, as well as in Orland Park, where they combine delicious food with an Irish pub ambiance. You got the best of both worlds. Still owned by Tom and Frank Fox, whose mom and dad, Frank and Teresa, bought the Western location from Al Capone's sister back in 1964. They opened the doors in Orland at 73 at 143rd and Ravinia Avenue. You'll recognize the stone turrets of their Irish castle, whose great times have been celebrated for generations of Chicagoland Irish. Fox's is perfect for the whole family, pickup or delivery, or you can dine in, relax, and have a cocktail with your dinner, whether it's steak, ribs, chicken, or especially pizza. It's all good. Having a party? Fox's also does catering. Call Fox's in Beverly at 773-239-3212 or in Orland Park at 708-349-2111. They're proud sponsors of Hibernian Radio and all Irish first responders. Mention this show for a free toothpick. Gotta love that Fox's Pizza.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Please. Across the tracks where they only spoke Yakky Dak.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bones and bamboo.
Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Can I get you two?
This
yeah.
is almost 70 years we're talking.
70
when
years?
The mix what? His teeth.
Oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes oh. and took him to a state of mind.
Mind,
yes.
mind, mind.
Been placed on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome.
A crazy, silly, screwy.
Have a seat.
Known as... Hoolytown.
Hoolytown.
Welcome to Hoolytown. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back. Welcome to Hoolytown.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
Yeah, welcome to Hoolytown. It's a thin place just on the other side of bonkers. One joke. A little boy and his grandfather are raking leaves in the yard. The little boy sees an earthworm trying to get back into its hole. He says, Grandpa, I bet I can put that worm back in that hole. The grandpa replies, I'll bet you $5 you can. It's too wiggly and limp to put back in that little hole. Little boy runs into the house and comes back out with a can of hairspray. He sprays the worm until it's straight and stiff as a board. The boy proceeds to then put the worm back into the hole. The grandfather hands the little boy $5, grabs the hairspray, and runs into the house. 30 minutes later, the grandpa comes out, hands the boy another $5. The little boy says, Grandpa, you already gave me $5. Grandpa replies, I know, that's from Grandma. Okay, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. God bless you all, and we will see you later. Bye. Shoes.